Also, I'm the Ringwood. Also known as Awesome Mike. Yeah, I'm going to read this real quick, and then we're going to step back for a minute, and I'm going to get outside myself for just one brief second, and then I'm going to be all in. All right? All right. The speaker. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group's inexperience in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. A basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war story, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, our strength, and our hope of recovery. I'm an addict named Michael. First of all, I'm going to tell you right now that I disagree with that last portion. I disagree with that. Our scripture tells us that our using experience, it causes a gold mine of experience to share with the individual who's just walking in. So that individual might identify with what we are now receiving as a result of staying here. Peace, serenity, and joy. You don't come in the door with all that. It's a process. Our literature says, and I'm a product of the literature. I don't make no excuses about it. And if you got a problem with it, I hope you don't work enough steps where you're going to be able to share that shit with somebody. Yeah. Our literature says, first of all, I want to thank Almighty God. I want to thank Almighty God. I want to thank the traveling angel that I prayed for, me and Kathy, before we stepped out the door. The traveling angel, he jumped on top of the car, and he held on through some rough terrain because I didn't know where I was coming. I want to thank him once again for the internet and MapQuest. I don't thank him for that. Yeah, I want to thank him for MapQuest. I want to thank him for the fear angel being removed when we got on that structure that's 17 miles long, and I looked to the east and the west, and all I saw was water. And I really didn't feel like swimming this time of year. I just want to thank him for another day clean, for one day clean. I am extremely grateful. But let me tell you about what our literature says about being grateful. We might often say that we're grateful to have this program. It gives us a way to cope with life on life terms. And after we've been clean for a while, we may realize that the principles of Narcotics Anonymous are actually universal and could probably change the world if everybody practiced them. We may start to wonder why we don't open up NA to all those who have any kind of problem. But as I've learned from my predecessors, having a single purpose is probably one of the most effective ways of ensuring that the opportunity will remain for an addict to receive the identification he or she needs. If NA tried to be all things to all people, an addict might walk on this beach this morning only wanting to know how to stop using drugs and not be able to find anybody who knew. I am so glad that when it was my time, when it was time for me, when I was at the end of the road, There were people here already endowed into the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. I am so glad that those same people were working steps, had smart feet, were opening the door for me to walk up in a meeting so that I might hear something so that my spiritual condition would be changed. I just want to applaud my predecessors. Y'all were here for me. I didn't know. Because there was something inside of me. There was something inside of me that turned me from Michael, whom God wanted me to be, to a dope fiend. There was something inside me that turned me into a dope fiend. And for the world of you, I don't know what it was. I don't know why. It turned me into a vile and corrupt individual. A fiend. And fiends showed up, Michael disappeared. And I turned myself into a fiend, and it happened gradually. We sit them out here, we tell the new cat that the disease of addiction is insidious, and then we send them on their way. We don't tell them what the hell that shit means. I need to break that shit down. It's a gradual effect that becomes fully developed before it becomes apparent. It's a gradual effect that becomes fully developed before it becomes apparent. So by the time I know, it is out of control. I didn't know. And here's the etiquette says, certain things followed as we continue to use. I didn't start out wanting to be no fiend. Let me take you back. I want to take you back. I want to take you back to when Monday and Tuesday we worked or went to school, Wednesday and Thursday we worked or went to school, and Friday came. And we wanted to go to the dance. But I was a little bit insecure with who I really was. And I needed a little extra something so that I could get that must on. You know the word. So I might have started off with a little sip or a little tutor, a little whatever. It might have started off with a little whatever that turned me from Michael, the insecure individual, to brave Mike. There he goes. I need the awesome Mike. There he goes. Turn me into awesome Mike. And before you know it, I can do the darn thing, y'all. But once again, I got to remind you that our literature says certain things followed as we continue to use. We developed strange habits and mannerisms. I don't know what happened when I used the drug that I used, and it's not important what I used. The literature said, I hear people share some stuff about dope, so it was a symptom. That ain't what the literature says. The literature says our inability to control the use of drugs was a symptom of the disease of addiction. I'm going to step back away from that for a minute because I need to explain my disease to you. First of all, I need to know when it's active. And if I look on the first page, on page one, it ain't nothing deep. I ain't got to go in search of it. It's on the first fucking page. I need to tell you, I'm going to read this here because I don't want no misquote. Because how do we know when our disease is active? We really become trapped in an obsessive, compulsive, self-centered routine in this loop that leads nowhere but to physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional decay. I'm in my disease. And I always tell my sponsors, whenever you're feeling like you can't do this shit, whenever you're feeling like you can't stay clean a day at a time, I'm going to need you to take a trip through the basic text and go to page 80. Go to page 80. And if that shit don't scare you, read it again. Read it until you digest it in your system and you are fearful of the monster that you face every day. And what it says is in our disease, we are dealing with a destructive, violent power greater than ourselves that can lead to relapse. if we have relapsed. It also says that we need to get to a meeting as soon as possible. Otherwise, it could be only months, days, or hours before we cross a threshold where we are going beyond recall. That shit scares me. It scares me, y'all. I'm fearful of that. I don't want to use no more, man. I don't want to use no more. Because I remember at the end of the road, I remember walking up and down the street in Columbia, South Carolina at 4 o'clock in the morning, looking to the east and the west, the north and the south, only looking for the fucking headlights, only wondering which way is it going to come, because all I need is just one. If I could get one, I'd be all right. I could never get the one to be all right. Only my father looking at me in the face and saying, Michael, what's wrong with you? And I'm giving him all I can give him and telling him the truth. I don't know, Dad. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I remember stealing my baby daughter's diapers and her baby carriage. And I don't know how I made it around there, but the dope boy, his girl just had a baby. And I needed one more. I remember going around there with my daughter's carriage and struggling with that shit and saying to myself, I know she needs this. But the disease had me using, oh, I'll get another one next week. And I gave that to him. And my daughter didn't have nothing. I didn't just say that we caused many people, not just harm, great harm. But most of all, we harmed ourselves. I love this program of Narcotics Anonymous. Now I'm going to step away and come back and tell you about me. I'm an addict named Michael. I was born in Wurzburg, Germany. I just happened to be born off base, so I'm a fucking German citizen. When I turned 18 years old, I had to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, and take a naturalization test. I had to get a fucking green card. I had a loving disciplinarian as a father, a stay-at-home mom who loved me and nurtured me. The disease of addiction showed up on my corner, on my doorstep, at the age of 8. The literature reminds me that most of the things that happened to us when we were a little child. At the age of 8, my mother, who was one of us, not because I said she's one, our literature says you remember when you say you are. My mother admitted to me just most recently, years ago, that I was an addict, Mike. I didn't understand that then, but once I became what she had became, and I found the freedom that she has now, I understood. And she abandoned us at 8 years old. We talk about how God shows up. See, God showed up then in the form of a sister who was 9 years old. And my sister had to take on the responsibilities of not only caring for me, but caring for my brother, my other brother, and another brother. She was it. And I thank God for showing up in the form of a 9-year-old girl. Well, I used to sit back sometimes when we were playing outside, and I used to ask my brother, why can't she come out and play? I wanted my sister to play with me. Well, I thank God that he put our family in the position that she needed to be in for us children. Because she taught me everything. She helped me do my homework. She cooked for me. She did all of those things. And I had a mother who was using dope. And she abandoned us. When my father had came from Vietnam, I remember him. He's always been my hero. I didn't have to look on the TV for no hero. I had a living in the house hero. And I called him daddy every day. My father came home and he looked for my mother. For 30 days we had what they call PCS orders, permanent change of station orders, and we were due to leave Fort Bragg to go to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. But for 30 days, my father looked for my mother. He looked on the rocks, behind doors, on the wall. He looked everywhere for her. And when I seen him cry, this was the first time that you got another. I want you to go there with me. You talk about an 8-year-old boy looking at his hero. I ain't never seen my father cry. He has always been that strong figure for me. And I'm looking up at daddy. He's crying. He's crying. Because he loved my mother. He loved that woman, man. But he had to go. And he piled all us children up and he took off and here we go to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I don't know shit about South Carolina. All I know is my mama ain't with us. Where my mama at? And for a long time I think I used that as an excuse to be accepted by everybody. I wanted everybody to like me, man. Please like me. I can do what you want me to do. I'll become whoever you want me to become. And when I met people in the course of the Fort Jackson experience, I met people from all over the world. And if you were from New York, I was from Manhattan. If you were from Philadelphia, I was from fucking Broad Street and Lehigh. I did the homework. I would go get the Atlas. And if you were from someplace today, tomorrow I knew all about it. I knew what school that you didn't go to, that I might have went to, that it was a possibility that you didn't get on that side of town and knew about it. But you had heard about it. So you left our meeting saying, boy, that damn Mike, he's showing as a Philadelphia somebody. But I did that, and it carried me all the way into middle school and high school. Well, in middle school, I seemed to gravitate towards the not positive. Our literature says we turned our lives over to a destructive power. And I can remember all of the kids that I hung out with. I never could understand why my father didn't allow me to have a birthday party. Everybody else did. But after working a fourth step and exposing the direct truth, not honesty, the truth about what happened out there, I saw why he didn't let me have a party. All my friends were stars. I ain't letting them thugs in my house, he probably said. Not your friends. Not in this house. But I didn't understand that then. I thought he was being a little bit rough on me. But I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to have friends. I wanted everybody to like me. And as a result of doing that, and being in this destructive power thing, all of the friends that I had, they were doing things that I was not accustomed to doing. They were smoking reefers. They had some big old things called Quaaludes. And I didn't know you weren't supposed to take the whole thing, just a half. I took all of them. That damn thing happened, so I don't know. I'll never forget that experience, because after that experience, I was rehabilitated. I didn't do that shit no more. I never did that no more. But what I'm talking about is, I started to do things that I was not accustomed to doing. And as a result of being accustomed to do those things, I crossed this imaginary line that you might hear people talk about. I crossed the line from being accepted or being all right with wanting to change who I really was to a spiritual, mental, physical decay. I'm not going to share that when I first picked up the first dope, I was an addict. But I can share that the first time I picked up dope, an addict was born. An addict was born. Because I could not ever do anything one time. I couldn't do one or nothing. I used to be the guy that when we went out and drank, and I want to remind you that our literature firmly states alcohol is a drug. It's a drug. And we have people with the disease of addiction. We must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. All drugs in order to recover. And I need to tell you that a disease is a harmful development. Oh, I ain't forgot where I was, but for the sake of the new cat who might not know what he suffers from, the disease is a harmful development. That's disease. Harmful development. Our literature says that we did not become addicted overnight, so remember, easy does it. My addiction, here it goes now. I'm a wordy guy. My grand sponsor name was Mon. He said, God damn it, Mike, you wordy as hell. It's a sick psychological or pathological reaction to anything with life-damaging consequences, and it's not limited to drugs and alcohol. I say sick psychological. My thinking is not good on a regular basis. And I can think about something being the truth, and it's not being the truth, but I will live the truth that I think, and that truth will mean that I put myself in life-threatening conditions. Sick psychological or pathological reaction to anything with life-damaging consequences, and it's not limited to drugs and alcohol. I had to get there through the process of recovery, because when I came here, my definition was this: a surrender to or a devotionship to a substance, habitually or obsessively. When I picked up the first one, it was on, and I couldn't stop. It was on, and I wanted to stop, man. And the pathological part about my disease is I continue to do something over and over, over again, even against my will. I keep doing this shit over, over, over again, and I want to stop, but I keep doing it over, over, and over again. I didn't want to use no more, man. And that's why I wound up in places like jail. I wound up in places like prison. And I know each time I went, the last couple of times I went to the courthouse, I had to ask my lawyer, what did I do this time? I didn't know. I was in a drug stupor. I didn't know. What did I do this time? And what he told me was, Mike, you're going to prison on this one. I'm going to try to keep you from not going so long, but you're going. He says, you're going, Mike. And what I found out was, by being locked up, I found some freedom. Because I had fears also. Fear dictated everything that I did. I was afraid. I'm afraid. I'm scared. I want to quit, but I don't know how. I'm afraid. What can I do? I'm scared. Oh, shit. Isolation had become a way of life. Isolation. I didn't want to be around you. Because number one, I didn't want to share with you. And number two, I didn't want everybody else to know. I literally said we became two people. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And after a while, Jekyll was all right. But one day, Jekyll died and all that was left was Hyde. And I didn't like the things Hyde was willing to do. I didn't like robbing my dad. I didn't like my father being on his dying bed. Now remember, I told you he was my hero. I didn't like my hero being on his dying bed and me robbing him. I didn't like that. And I had to face that after I got clean. After I got clean and he's dead. And I might be jumping all over, but that's where the spirit needs me, I'm going. He died. Last week I turned Last Wednesday I turned 45 years old. And I've been blessed. I have two girls. I got a 5-year-old, and I got a 3-year-old. My 5-year-old's name is Jordan, But at that time, I was crossing over. I felt God give me to do something in my life. And I said, Jordan, Jordan. Because in another fellowship I partake of, it said it crossed across Jordan on dry land. I was tired of being wet up by that dope. I didn't want to use that dope no more. And my last daughter, her name is Faith. The substance of things hope for the evidence of the unseen. That's what she is to me. And those of y'all from New Jersey, y'all might have heard me. I was up in Ninjak. I shared up in Ninjak about my daughter. And the things that I'm going through right now because of the relationship with me and my daughter's mother. I got a beautiful woman right there who got my goddamn back. She got my back. No questions asked. Got him. She got him. And she nurtures my girl. Because I can't teach my girls how to be a woman. I can't do that. I done throw the white flag up. I can't do that. But what I can teach them is the individual or style of man that they want. That they can say some shit like this. I want a man like my daddy. Yeah.
Say it again, bro.
And I did the child support thing. I wouldn't establish it for my goddamn self. Because it's my responsibility to be financially supportive of the spirits that God has entrusted me with. They don't loan to me. I don't own them. They don't loan. And I carry them around my neck. This is me, my Faith, and my Jordan. I love my girl. There ain't nothing on this earth breathing that I account for more than my girl. And one great thing about the program of Narcotics Anonymous, about this spiritual gift that I've been granted, is that my girls ain't never got to see me crawl on the floor. They ain't never got to see me humble myself and plead and beg, because I was a begging at it. I was a beggar. It wasn't got no keys for me, man. At the end of the road, I got tired of pushing the goddamn stem. I got tired of cutting the can open and putting some alcohol on it and getting some shit called back. I didn't want no more back. I didn't want none of that. I wanted some freedom, man. I remember the last day that I used. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the time. I remember my spiritual condition. I remember how I felt. And more importantly, I remember how I looked. Because for a long time, I heard a sister today talking about denial. Long time I was in denial. I couldn't see it, sweetie. I couldn't see what you saw when you looked at me. But one day, the God of my understanding, who was working for me far before I started to admit that he was, showed me me. And when I saw what you probably saw when you looked at me, I was afraid. I had black rings around my eyes. My lips were cracked and chafed. I weighed about 120 pounds, man. I had big lips, a big fucking head, and a skinny body. I was just surviving, man. You ain't got to suffer no more, sweetie. I done done enough for you. You ain't got to suffer no more. You ain't got to suffer no more, man. You could be here for somebody. Because somebody was here for you. And we share it means that I love you. You will learn to love you until you can love yourself. Why? Not because you are who you are, but because somebody loved me back to life. Somebody believed in me and believed in me back to life. And I'm so grateful to those individuals. I remember that last day. It was horrible. But something different happened this day. I woke up that morning. I don't know why. A flat book, it says you don't have to know why it happened. All you have to know is that it happened. And on that day, it happened for me. I woke up that day and there was plenty of everything that I needed to continue to do the things that I did. But I said something that day that I had never said before. I don't want that shit, man. I don't want that shit, man. And I don't think the guys who are surrounding me knew. I don't think they knew, sweetie, because when it went around the circle, they came back to me, and I told them, don't you hear me? I don't want that shit no more. I kicked them all out. And I stood at the table by myself with me. And for the first time in my whole entire life, I cried out to the only thing that I knew other people had cried out to. I didn't believe it, but I cried out anyway. I said, God, if you can do what they say you can do, not what I believe, I said, if they, because there have been some people telling me, God, go do something for you. But I couldn't feel it. I couldn't feel it. I couldn't touch it. So I cried out, God, if you can do what they say that you can do, I need some help. And I cried out for help. And it was on that day that help became available. It was that day. It was that day that help became available for me. And I thought that the help was going to come through going to prison. Because what I did was, I got up, I walked across the street to the neighbor, I gave the neighbor my keys, and I said, please, if you see my face again, don't let me in my house. Because I knew that if I go back in, I'm going to die. And I didn't want to really die. I didn't really want to die. But I knew that day that if I had walked back in that house and used one more time, I believed that I would die. And I went back up to the station. Y'all call it the prison. We don't call it that. We call it the station. I went back up to the station and I walked in. And everybody knew me. They called me Red. I had them been locked up 30 or 40 times. And they said, Red, what you doing? I said, I came to turn myself in. I know I done something. I'm talking about the truth, sweetie. I said, I know I done something. And unlike all the other times that they had locked me up, this time they said, Mike, you ain't done nothing, man. So my statement to the secretary walking out the door was, are there any police cars out there? And she said, yeah, Mike, there's a couple. And when I walked out the door, what I was looking for was a brick. Because I'm going to climb on top of this car, and I'm going to bash this window in. Now, what I want you to remember was, I didn't want to use no more. And I didn't know what to do. So I needed to be locked up to get freedom. Is that not insane? I needed to be confined to get freedom, because I had never used locked up. And the only reason that I didn't use locked up was because they gave me a max out date. And I know what date I was going to get out to continue to use. I wasn't going to mess that date up. I wasn't going to mess that date up after a couple of weeks, months. I ain't messing that date up. You tell me 8 months from today, you're going to be out, and then the day after I can use, I'm going to be a dutiful, good-ass convict criminal. But the truth of the matter was that there were two plans at work. There was my plan, and then there was God's plan. And my plan at that time did not matter. Because the lady told me, don't do that. Don't do that. If you want some help, go sit on your door, on your stoop, and I will be down there in 10 minutes. So I went down, and I was defeated. I was suffering. I'm crying real big. 10 minutes later, two police cars came and they pulled up to my house. They called me Red and they said, hey Red, we got two warrants that we found in the computer. I jumped for joy. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Hey, because I didn't want to use no more, see? I didn't want to use no more, though. And this might have been my way out. I was willing to go. And one of the officers said something to me then that I didn't understand. But after doing a 5 and a 6 and working a 7, I understand it now. He looked at me and he said, you look ready. Ready for what? Ready for what? And they took me there, and normally they go down and take a left. Because going to left is to kill me. Well, they're going to hold me over for a while until they send me where they need to send me at. This time they went down and they took a right. I'm in a comatose, drug-induced state at this time. When my eyeballs opened up, I was in a treatment facility. They had mandatory means then. I didn't know what mandatory meant no more. I literally says we forgot. We forgot what it was like before we got clean. We forgot how to play. We forgot how to work. We forgot how to show genuine concern for others. We forgot how to take baths. We forgot how to get a haircut. Haircut? You know how much haircuts cost? $12. $12. $12. You know how many hits that is? We forgot that shit. And they took me to this place. And in this place, the second day, I went to this mandatory meeting. And there were these people who walked in. And they said that they were from H&R. Hospitals and institutions. And I didn't pay that no motherfucking mind. I didn't hear none of that shit. But what I got to share with you is that a friend of mine shared with me a while ago, and I shared with you tonight, that when you're brand new, if you can't believe what you hear, believe what you see. And what I saw was I saw some people who looked real good. They was matching and shit. Hey, they had gold and shit on. They was looking real good and smelling real good, and I hadn't looked real good or smelled real good in a long time. It had been a long time, sweetie. But I saw these people, and I wanted to continue to come to see these people come in who was looking good. And one day, Flatbush said something amazing happened as we went to our very first few meetings. And there was addict in those meetings, sharing that they had stayed clean, had gotten clean and stayed clean. Addicts who used dope like I had used dope. Addicts who had been to the places that I had been to, not just the geographical locations, but the hangouts of horror that my spirit had visited each time I used. Those addicts knew about those places because they had been there themselves. And I heard that. And they were sharing that. And I started my process of coming to believe. And I shared a little bit earlier that a part of the process of coming to believe, I learned to call it 17, superficial happiness. Superficial happiness. And goddammit, I hear people share that to me. It ain't about your car, it ain't about your clothes. That bullshit. That's bullshit. That's not what our literature says. I learned to call it a process. And the early process and the early stages of our recovery, they call it superficial happiness. Have you ever seen a new person come in with their ass dragging? And they still look all chafed up and assy? You ever seen them come in with one blue shoe and a fucking white suit because that's all they got? You ever see them 2 weeks after coming to a meeting every day just because y'all said keep coming back? Have you ever seen them buy two shoes that match? A short outfit or a long outfit start to feel good about themselves? Or let it cause a superficial happiness. And then the second step of the Flat Book, it says that you can develop a sense of trust in the process of recovery and in a power greater than yourself. Where it's about to take you is from the superficial happiness to a fundamental transformation that's going to make your life more satisfying. On a deeper level, I want my recovery to be deep, goddammit. I want it to be deep. Your recovery can be just as deep as you want it to be. It ain't gotta be profound, just deep. I want it all in my goddamn bones. I want recovery in my ankles and my arms. That's why in Columbia, South Carolina, when the program chair called me and said, "Hey, Mike, how about you drive 9 hours to come share at 6 o'clock in the morning?" but without a second fucking thought. The response was, we will be there. Put bells on, goddammit. We are dope fiends on the beach at a resort. Looking at the goddamn ocean, we saw the sunrise. My spirit is full. I ain't gotta use no more. You ain't gotta use no more. You ain't gotta use no more. This is a great day. It is a great day. I had an awesome time here. I love each and every one of y'all. I thank the programming committee for asking me to come. Y'all, thanks for letting me share.